Okay, good evening, Rabbi Isai. I have to be honest, I still kind of feel awkward speaking to a camera rather than to people, but I keep telling myself that there are people there, so okay. I was once approached by somebody who wanted to talk something out with me. There was some sort of dispute going on. There was a dispute going on in the neighborhood between two parties. And one of the parties involved in the dispute was asking this fellow. This fellow was like a little bit of an innocent, a naive-ish kind of fellow. He was asking him to do certain things to help him out against the other party. So this person came to me, was talking it out, and I told him, look, there's a machlekes going on that has nothing to do with you. You just keep out of it. Spoke about the dangers of machlekes a little bit. Okay, fine. Comes back to me a few days later. He said he discussed it with the person who had wanted him to do these things, and the person explained to him that it's true. Machlekes is a terrible thing. But here there aren't really two sides. There isn't really another side. He explained to him why he's right, which means that there really isn't another side, which means that it isn't the machlokes. It's just that he's right, the other person is wrong, and therefore there's no reason not to help him. So I said to this fellow, you know what? I don't think that there ever was a machlokes in history where there were two sides. In every machlokes in history, there was only one side. Which side? The side that you were on. The other side was clearly wrong. And you know what? That's exactly where the danger of machlekes is. Let's have a little bit of a look at the story of Korach, just because of the insight it holds into human nature and into the mistakes that we are liable to make if we're not careful. Let's just analyze the story. Analyze the story largely in the perspective of Ramban, also with a certain twist of the Chovos HaLevavos. Just tell the story, see what happened. So let's think of it in these terms. You know, imagine the scene where it's toward the end of school, toward the end of the semester, and they are about to announce the valedictorians. And you have a person sitting there. There are, I don't know how many candidates there are sitting there, 50 people there. And they announce two or three valedictorians. And you have the person who's sitting there and he's like waiting, expecting to hear his name. Maybe justified, maybe not justified, but whatever the case is, expecting to hear his name, waiting to hear. His name is Gimpel Yimpelovich, right? The first name he hears is, no, Zundel Feldman. Okay, he doesn't have to be first, he'll be second. The next name, Feivel Glumpenstein. All right, our Gimpel is sitting here, he doesn't have to be second, he can be third too, but then you know what? He wasn't number three either. Korach was a great man. We have to understand that. Korach was a great man. If he was great enough to draw after him many of the leaders of Klal Yisrael, we understand that he was not a nobody. He was from the most distinguished families of Klal Yisrael, and he himself was a person of very significant distinction. Now this man, this great man, had a vision. He had a vision in which he saw that there was going to be immense greatness coming from his family. And therefore, he understood that there is greatness slated for him. He saw the prestige of his family later down the line. He understood that he is going to be the progenitor of one of the most distinguished families in Klal Yisrael, and therefore he understood that in terms of the statuses that are being set up now, it's only a matter of time until he gets his. And therefore, when Moshe Rabbeinu designated Aaron HaKohen, his brother, as the Kohen Gadol, it was something of a start. But, okay, he didn't get the role of Kohen Gadol. Something else will come. There are more roles to be given out. Now, I want to note, in parentheses, Rabbi Avigdor Miller talks about how actually Moshe Rabbeinu was commanded to appoint Aaron as the Kohen Gadol. That was actually a test for Moshe, because Moshe was the ultimate selfless person. And for him to actually go and appoint his brother went against his nature, went against who he was. It was a tough thing for him to do. And this was, on the contrary, this was the test. And for most people, the test would be not to appoint your brother. This was the test for Moshe. Whatever the case is, Korach is willing to be grand about that and let that go. Something of a question mark. Okay, raised an eyebrow, but didn't do much more than that. But then came the next stage. It was the appointment of the Nasi, the leader of the family. And here already, Korach realized, this is what is waiting for me. And then you know what happened? The name that was announced was a different name. The name that was announced was Elitzofan ben Uziel. And now, Korach had a choice. He's let down. That's it. For the time being, they finished announcing the valedictorians. Now Korach had a choice. Either he's going to say, which was actually true, that's right, there is greatness in your family, but not in the way that you understood. It's something that may be a little bit further down the line. The fact that he saw greatness generations later, he interpreted that to mean that means that I'm going to be one of the greatest people holding the highest positions in Klal Yisrael. So he could have either said, okay, apparently I misread that. Maybe it'll be something coming later. Maybe it'll be something further down the line. Or he could have understood it differently. He could have, and he did, say, this greatness was destined for me. How could it have happened that I didn't get it? Aha, There must be something rotten in the system. What's that? Nepotism. Moshe Rabbeinu is making his own arbitrary decisions. So now, Korach emerges as a holy crusader. This is not about me, Chas V'Shalom. Now that I understand that his decisions are personal, they're not what Hashem wanted. He was doing what Hashem wanted? We know who he would have appointed. Yours truly. If he didn't appoint me, then we understand that he's making his own decisions. He's doing things arbitrarily here. If so, Korach said, this is not about me. This is about the honor of the Jewish people. And he emerges as a holy crusader, fighting for the honor and the dignity of the Jewish people. And he comes out, he goes around to the Shvatim, and basically he says to them, look what Moshe is doing. Moshe is making a monopoly. Now he doesn't say a thing about, really it should be me. He doesn't say, vote for me. No, that's not what Korach is going to do. Korach is coming and saying, vote for yourselves. Chas v'shalom, this is not about me. I am hurting over the pride of Klal Yisrael. He expresses in the words, Kol ha'edo kulam kedoshim. He does not come with a claim of, I should have been the Kohen. That's not what he says. He comes with 250 leaders, 250 of the great respected people, representing, look in the Ramban. The Ramban says, they represented the full range of the Shvatim. And he comes and he says, Moshe, you don't have the right to be exploiting Klal Yisrael. Kala Eido Kulam Kedoshim. All of Klal Yisrael are very holy. Every individual of Klal Yisrael, this is what people want to hear. Why are you allowing Moshe to make people more important than you? Do you understand your own importance? Do you understand your own importance? Not about me, Chas V'Shalom. This is about you. Moshe is making his own decisions here in order to show his family favor. Maduatis Nasal Kal Hashem, what right do you have to put yourself up over Kal Hashem, the nation of Hashem? This is Korach's holy crusade. And you know what? He probably believed it too. We may assume that he did. We may assume that he actually believed it. Once he understood, once he saw through Moshe and understood that Moshe is not acting in the shlichus of Hashem, but he's doing his own thing, now all of a sudden it became a holy fight for the honor of Klal Yisrael. Now, when Moshe responds, Moshe says, Hama'at mikem, it kind of looks like, if you look in the psukim, the Ramban points this out. Korach didn't say a word about himself. Korach comes and says, everybody, all of Klal Yisrael are holy, how can you put yourself up over Klal Yisrael? Moshe responds to him and says, listen, Hashem gave you greatness. He gave you prestige as a Bnei Levi. You want to be the Kohen also. You want to be Yon Kuhuna also. Korach never said that. He said, Kol Eido Kulam Kedoshim. He said that you have no right to be putting people up over Klal Yisrael. But the Ramban says, Moshe saw exactly through Korach. He understood, he said, Korach, let's call a spade a spade. This is not about Klal Yisrael. This is not about their honor. This is about you want to be the Kohen Gadol. That's really what you wanted, right? You're upset about Aaron. You're upset about Levi Tzofa Ben Uziel. This is really what it's about. He says this to Korach, and this is also a way of trying to dissuade the people who are following him. But this is what was going on here. There was a struggle in Korach's own mind of, he had been looking forward to that prestige. When it was taken away from him, that caused him, taken away from him in his own mind. It wasn't taken away from him. It was never meant for him in the first place. But in his own mind, that caused him to all of a sudden see everything differently, to all of a sudden see everything in a negative light, to all of a sudden see Moshe Rabbeinu as exploiting the system for his own purposes. A great man. But this was the mistake that he made. And if we look at the Chavis Avavos, we'll understand that this was actually more than undermining the authority of Moshe Rabbeinu. Really, the great mistake here was straight and simple apikorsis. It was almost like denying the ability of Hashem. Why? The Chavis Halvavis talks about the people, he talks about different levels of people who would like to have these different rationalizations to free themselves of the requirement to really follow the mitzvahs. Right? Which, by the way, Korach did this too, right? We know the famous Chazal of Korach, where he suddenly started showing how all these different things that Moshe said are ridiculous, right? Like, for example, he came to Moshe and he said, if you have a room full of Sfarim, Sifrei Torah, a room full of Sifrei Torah, does it require a mezuzah? And Moshe Rabbeinu said, yes. So Korach said, look how ridiculous that is. The whole room is full of Sifrei Torah that contain all the parshiyos of the mezuzah. You have to stick another little mezuzah on the door. And Korach also gave that whole sob story about, you know, when it comes to Trumas and Maaseros, he gave that whole sob story about the poor woman who had a tiny little garden and who had to work so hard, and by the time she finally produced something, the Kohen came and took this, and the Levi came and took that, and she was left with nothing. The poor woman, he jerked everybody's tears. Basically, what was Korach coming and doing? Korach was coming and saying, Moshe, the Jewish people are Hashem's people, and you are basically taking over the system. Chavis Halvavos says that you have people who will come and claim that Of course, Hashem gave the Torah to the Jewish people. All of the miracles of Mitzrayim happened. The great revelation at Har Sinai happened, but nevertheless, we're not bound by the Torah because the Torah was conveyed through Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was not necessarily doing everything according to the dictates of Hashem. Wasn't necessarily doing everything according to the dictates of Hashem. He used a lot of his own philosophy and a lot of his own thoughts and a lot of his own ideas, and acting in the capacity of Hashem's agent to take them out of Mitzrayim, he sold them this, he sold them that. The Chavis Salvama says that this is a sacrilege toward Hashem, because what this basically means is that you're coming and saying that Hashem does not know how to set up a successful system. Hashem decided he wants to operate through a human being, right? Hashem decided that he wants to convey the Torah to the Jewish people through this human being. And what you're coming and saying is that this human being, we're agreeing, right? Korach is agreeing that Hashem brought about the Makkos through Moshe Rabbeinu, that Hashem revealed himself at Har Sinai through Moshe Rabbeinu. What are you saying? Now Moshe Rabbeinu is trying to take control of the system, which basically means that Hashem set up a system that he wanted to work, and it's not working. So Korach Mamish brought himself to a place of, it began with his own desire. I wouldn't even say desire. I wonder if perhaps if he had never had that vision, if he would have been great enough, probably would have been great enough to just go along humbly with everything that was going on. But once he had that vision, it whetted his appetite. And once it whetted his appetite, that appetite now started guiding the way he saw everything going on around him. This is the power of partiality. This is the power of when we're wrapped up in our own way of seeing things and we can mamish turn things inside out in a very scary way. Rambam makes another comment with the Shem Yishmuel, brings out more. It's very interesting how Korach, that really, his target here is Aaron, right? What he's basically saying and insinuating is that Moshe Rabbeinu is doing things based on his own partialities. Aaron, why would Aaron be the man chosen when you have someone like me? This really was an attack on Aaron to a large extent. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, "Aaron mahu kisalinu ala." Right? This is not about me and Aaron. This is about the word of Hashem. Why are you attacking Aaron? The Ramban notes how Aaron, throughout this whole thing, is completely silent. You don't hear a word from him. He's the one being attacked. He doesn't say a word. The Ramban says something amazing. He says, "Aaron, in his humility, was almost like saying." Korach might be right? Me? Certainly Korach is a more worthy person than me. He didn't actually say this. We have to understand this. Aaron also believed that if Hashem said he should be doing it, then he should be doing it. But Aaron was like, look, I can't contradict him. He's a greater man than me. I don't understand why Hashem chose me. And the Shem Yishmuel says that this was exactly the difference between Aaron and Korach. Shem Yishmuel says, Korach wanted the kahuna. How can you blame him? How can you blame him when a person really tasted what closeness of Hashem meant, especially in those great days in the Midbar when Hashem was closer than he ever was since in history? So they tasted closeness of Hashem and it was all about just wanting more. How can you blame Korach for really, really wanting the kahuna? But the Shem Yishmuel says that this was exactly the point. In order for you to be the quintessential representative of Hashem, the quintessential conduit between Hashem and the Jewish people, this couldn't be about you. It couldn't be about you and what you wanted. And therefore, that was itself the reason why Aaron was qualified and Korach was not. Yes, the desire, the drive for closeness to Hashem was a great sentiment. But even then, you have to move yourself out of the picture and say, I do it according to Hashem's dictates. But we come back to this, we come back to our point. The lesson from this, in a very, very great way, is this point of suspecting ourselves of partiality. We get embroiled in something. We get emotionally involved in something. When there's some controversy going on, some dispute between us and somebody else. To be able to step back and say, maybe I'm not seeing things right. Maybe I'm not seeing a clear picture. Maybe there really is another side here. Maybe my thinking is off. To be able to suspect yourself of that, to be able to take counsel from external sources. This is the very scary lesson of Korach. I want to take this discussion a step further because this is really the subject of machlokes in general. Machlokes was always related to by the Torah leaders, by the Torah texts, as something very, very scary. We get involved, we get embroiled. I want to share that I once had the experience of getting very, very up close to a machlekes between very big poskim. There was a big controversy. There was a big controversy going on about a certain halachic issue, and I don't want to get into it too much, into the particulars. And there was a big machlekes between big poskim. Now, it's important to understand this. Great Torah authorities get very passionate when they are debating Torah and when they're debating halacha. And to the outside eye, it can look like they're not talking nicely to each other. And if you look all the way back from the times of the Mishnah and the Gemara, this was how it was. It's called Ritche de Araisa. It's called the boiling of the Torah. The Torah is boiling in their blood. And the way the Gemara puts it is, you have two Talmidei Chachamim who are disputing something. Nasim oivim zel lezeh. It says avu b'noi even. Rav and Talmido. You can have a father and son, or a Rebbe and a Talmud. They love each other. But they're debating a Torah subject. Nasim oivim zel lezeh. They become like enemies. They're at each other's throats. Ve'inam zazim misham ad shenasim oyavim zel lezeh. But they don't move from there until they part as lovers. Meaning the truth is, if you step into a yeshiva in the heat of a seder and you walk around, you will encounter chavrusas that are yelling at each other ferociously. And you know what? To the trained eye, it's a beautiful sight. To the untrained eye, it looks revolting. To the trained eye, it's a beautiful sight because they understand what's going on. And therefore, when there's actually a dispute between Torah greats, that's fine. It's part of the process of Torah being clarified, being hashed out, and that's how it worked all throughout the generations. Even if it looks like things are getting nasty, it's still fine. You know where the trouble begins? The trouble begins when other people get excited and they stop mixing in. They stop mixing into this dispute. It's not coming from the same great place as these great people who are involved in the machlokes. It becomes petty. It becomes political. And that's really where the problems start. There was a maisa where in Lublin, there was the Rav and the Rosh Yeshiva. The Rosh Yeshiva was the Maharam of Lublin, the famous Maharam on Shas. And the Rav was another great name. I forget now who the name was. And in the yeshiva, somebody had raised a problem with the Tosfos. And the Maharam gave a pilpul to resolve the problem with Tosfos. And then the Rav of the town was asked, and he said that the whole discussion, it doesn't really have basis because it's simply a printing error in the Tosfos. There's a couple of words got messed up, and if they have to be revised, and if you read it like that, then the whole problem doesn't begin. So people heard this. Now, had it stayed in the confines of the Bismedrash, that would have been just fine. But you know what happened? People started getting heated up about it. They said, he said it's a mistake in the text. He's giving all, somehow it turned into a whole town affair. It turned into a whole town affair. It got all heated up. And as these things usually do, people got very, very passionate about it. And finally it reached a situation where the town board, or however it works, was the Vada call, decided that they're sending the argument to one of the other Torah greats at the time, Marshal, I believe it was. And this is what happens when it moves out of the rabbinic realm and it spills out to the common folk. They said, after this whole dispute, whoever, both of these positions were being supported by the town, by the city, by the Vada of the city, whoever turns out to be wrong is going to be removed from his post. The Marshal, not knowing all the background, he agreed with the Rav that this was a text error, so they removed the Maharam of Lublin from his post. Promptly, the Rav resigned from his post also. So now, the town was left, the city was left without a Rav and without a Rosh Yeshiva. There's a whole continuation to this story with that. It had a happy ending. They both ended up being reinstated through the sharpness of the Marshal. I'm not going to go into the details now, but the point that I want to bring out is that the problem becomes when common folk have to throw their hat into the ring. That's what becomes the problem. Coming back to my experience, just it taught me so much how basically what happened was there was a big controversy going on, machlokes ha'aveirot, with a lot of practical halachic implications in the world of kashrus in a very contemporary way. And there were articles being written up. Those wanted to put out articles like representing both sides. And I was asked to write up the stand of one of the positions. So I was working very closely with this Rav, and this brought me very, very close to what we'll call the center of the action. What we'll call the center of the action. And I started seeing things from up close. And I did get emotionally involved, especially since this Rav was somebody who I knew very well and I was very close with. And I started getting offended by things that the other side was saying, et cetera, et cetera. And then I started saying some things myself. Baruch Hashem, the whole business fell through, meaning the writing of the articles and all that, because that was ridiculous anyways. It fell through. But Lamaisa, having stepped back, I came away with a very, very valuable lesson in terms of what machlokes means and what the danger of machlokes is. I suddenly stepped back for a minute and I said, 1 minute, you understand that the people on the other side, it's again, we're talking about great rabbanim on both sides. What was the problem? The problem was that there were the little folk getting in between, having to write up the articles and starting to say, well, this one said this and that one said that, and this is justified and that's not justified. Self-appointed umpires between Torah greats. When there's a machlekes between Torah greats, no umpires are needed. Let's let us little folks stay out of the picture. Let the process of halacha run its course. Once we get involved, that's where we mamish fall into. This is where the Yitzhahara can hit good people, because these are people who are not going to sin in other ways. You get them involved in a good machlokes. You get them involved in a good machlokes, and you can hit them with all the worst things. You can hit them with lashon hara. You can hit them with disparaging talmidei chachamim, which mamish, we have to realize, renders a person an apikoros if a person speaks disparagingly about a talmid chacham. And really, to bring this discussion to its conclusion, we come to a point that the Chovos HaLevavos makes, which is such beautiful wording, where he talks about pious person. He calls him the parush. What we would say, what we would use the word tzaddik, the Chovos HaLevavos uses the word parush. It's Chovos HaLevavos lexicon. Whatever it is, he has a long piece just describing the attributes of a parush. And there are a couple of expressions there that I always found especially striking. Machloktoi ni'ima u'tshuvasoi nichbedes. When he's in a machlokes, it's a pleasant experience. Meaning, having a machlokes with him is a pleasant experience. He knows how to keep his head when there's a machlokes. He doesn't get caught up in it. He doesn't get emotionally involved in it. There's something going on. There's a dispute, whether it's a personal dispute, a monetary dispute, a terror dispute, whatever it is. he is actually a pleasant rival. He's a pleasant rival. He's a person that's pleasant to deal with, also if you're on the other side of the gate, on the other side of the fence. This is something to bear in mind. Disputes come up. To have these words in front of us, to understand that once there's a dispute, on the contrary, it doesn't help if you're right or wrong. If you're right, you might be in even bigger danger, because if you're right and you really feel indignant and self-righteous, who knows what you might go and do as a result. To have those words in big, machlokta ne'ima, I am capable of being a pleasant rival, a pleasant rival. Not the type of person that, you know, is this macho sound to saying, you don't want to get on my bad side, right? It's a very macho sound to that. Wow, you're going to respect me for that. You don't want to get on my bad side. I can be a very pleasant person until you get in trouble with me. That might have a macho sound, but that puts you in a very, very bad category as far as Torah and Hashem goes. On the contrary, you want to be able to say, you know what? If you get into a dispute with me, you'll still find me to be a pleasant person. Machlekta ni'ima. I am capable of being a pleasant rival, keeping my cool, keeping focused, keeping it technical. What I have to do, I have to do. What I don't have to do, I don't have to do. Not allowing myself to get emotionally involved, and thereby to take a spare myself of that great pitfall that machlokes should be. Adarabba, let's learn the lesson of Korach and glean from it both the aspects of being very, very honest with ourselves, and also that caution, that wariness of that very, very great spiritual pitfall called machlokes, and to keep far away from it. A good Shabbos.